Welcome to the Proctor Podcast Series, presented by the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program at the University of Florida. Founded in 1967, SPOP is one of the largest oral history programs in the country, with nearly 5,000 interviews. SPOP, one community, many voices.
This podcast is based on the interview with Ms. Jean Chalmers. Ms. Chalmers was the former mayor of the city of Gainesville. She has also served time here as a social service administrator, a hospital trustee, and a city commissioner, and has been a longtime resident of Gainesville. However, Ms. Chalmers' life is very interesting in the fact that she is actually an immigrant from the country of Canada and had spent time in Europe before coming back to the United States and moving down to Gainesville. The first clip that I wish to share about Ms. Jean Chalmers is about her experience in Europe and about the diversity and the culture and the European issues that she saw and faced firsthand in the mid-1900s.
And then I went over to England because girls from Victoria went to England to get cultured. So I saved up my money and went off to London. And there I mixed with the colonial crowd. And in those days, that was the Indians, Pakistanis, Africans, the Queen of Tonga, you know, all the lands in the South Pacific, and then the Australians, the South Africans, and the Canadians were the English-speaking gang.
And what age was this that you were in
England? Well, I turned 21 when I was in England, so I went as a teenager,
okay.
You know, probably 18 or something like that. So then when it was time to come home, I came home pretty much on a refugee boat that was filled with Irish and Germans escaping. They were mainly just people without passports and without family left from the Second World War. And I landed in New York with $9 and it took me about a year to earn enough money to get out of New York and go back home for a visit. But by then, I was in love with New York and knew I would stay in the United States.
Ms. Chalmers was heavily involved in the civil rights movement in the city of Gainesville. This following clip details her involvement with the Human Relations Council in the 1960s.
Human rights, I meant Human Relations Council. Oh gosh, I don't know. Probably until the Civil Rights Act was passed. And at that time we became much more active. And most of my energy went over to the Gainesville Women for Equal Rights, which I think was formed in 1963, and I was active in that for 10 or 15 years. It was the second largest civil rights organization in the state of Florida. NAACP had a larger membership, we think. NAACP didn't keep written memberships because it was too dangerous. People didn't want to have their name showing up on an NAACP list. And we integrated many institutions in Gainesville and some statewide, like the Florida State Employment Office, which was run for white people. And so we got in touch with Secretary Wirtz from the Labor Department and said, are they getting federal money? Yes, they are. They are segregated. Oh, they better not be. And so we changed that. Hill Burton money was money that after the war was given to local communities to expand hospitals. And the local hospital, Alacho General, had Hill Burton money. And so the same thing. So we called Congress. Can you have a segregated hospital getting Hill Burton money? No, you can't. So we integrated Alacho General Hospital and then all the hospitals in Florida that were getting Hill Burton money.
So how did you find the information out about, like, which, who was getting what kind of money and stuff like that? What did that take?
Well, we were basically researchers. Florida had a rule that only one person from a family could work for the state. So there were all these overeducated women with college degrees that couldn't get jobs. So we spent 20, 30 hours a week just researching and working on civil rights.
Did you have access to, like, the, since you were wives of the faculty members, did you have access to, like, the university kind of resources that they had available?
The university was no help to us.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, we just went and did raw research. But there were a lot of faculty at the university was supportive to us, but the administration would not get involved.
And who was kind of like the president at that time? Do you know?
J. Wayne Wrights. Mm-hmm. J. Wayne was it during most of it. Stephen O'Connell was that the civil rights movement sort of merged into the women's movement and the anti-war movement. But J. Wayne Wrights was during the segregation movement.
So was he supportive at all of what you guys were doing?
No. Okay. No. Stephen C. O'Connell was the president during the war demonstrations. And no, none of them, even if they were, could never say so.
Right, okay.
Because so they looked upon the legislature for their money. The legislature was not sympathetic to our...
Coming from Canada, Europe, and New York, Ms. Chalmers was never acclimated to living in a segregated society. In the following clip, she speaks of the event which acted as a catalyst in her becoming involved with the civil rights movement in Gainesville, Florida.
National grouping, but there was no segregation or anything like that.
So when you came here, what were the initial kind of, what did you see first that made you kind of understand this is what segregation is? You weren't familiar mm-hmm. with it before. Mm-hmm. What kind of stood out to you the most about that system?
I often tell the story about what I think might have been the catalyst for my activity. It was a very rainy day in Gainesville, and I was down on Southwest First Avenue where Rice's Hardware is. And one of those torrential downpours where the water was just flowing down the gutter at the side. And there was an elderly black couple approaching me, and they stepped off into water ankle deep to let this 25-year-old white woman by. And that's when I just came home and said, I can't live like this. So that was a dramatic moment. But I'm sure there were other moments, but that one sticks out in my mind.
Ms. Chalmers also speaks about the process of desegregation and what desegregation brought to the African-American community, including the closing of Lincoln High as well as the forced integration of Gainesville High.
Were you at all a part of the integration of Gainesville High?
Well, yes and no. I was really opposed to integrating Gainesville High because what they did was close down the black high school mm-hmm. and make all the black kids leave their community, leave their culture. Lincoln High School was a very proud high school. They had great marching band, great football team, you know, and it was the center of the black community, and it just shredded it overnight. So I marched to protest the closing of Lincoln High School. I knew the kids that integrated Gainesville High School, of course, were very supportive of them, and we met often with the principal of Gainesville High School, who was not particularly in favor of integration, but he was in favor of law and order, so he told the football team that if there was any problem with the black kids, the football team had permission to beat up anyone that attacked the black kids. So we didn't have any violence. but he also really resisted integration as much as he could. And particularly, he was wanting to lay off a lot of black teachers because many of them were not as well educated or not as diplomaed as the white teachers. they knew how to teach black kids. The white teacher did not know how to teach black kids, but the principal wasn't sophisticated enough to understand that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Proctor Podcast Series. For more information about our program or interviews, please visit our website at www.history.ufl.edu/ORAL or call us at area code 352-392-7168. That's 352-392-7168. SPOP, one community, many voices.